G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 7B.
Well, what does she say under humanly construed? And the definition she gives there is from Webster. She gives, therefore, there a definition that has a lot to do with the old science. Now, perhaps I must put here in between a remark, because I have been comparing old science and new science, and have shown that we have to have the new science and slowly get away from the old science. But that is always only true in a certain measure. We never really leave the good of the old behind. We only go forward and see that the good of the old has not been the maximum or the optimum of good. But all that was good in the former stages, we still can honor and still can take as some rungs on the ladder in order to go up higher. Did I put that right? Rungs? Rungs? You say rungs, yeah. So, said humanly construed, and gave a definition from Webster, it is knowledge duly arranged and referred to general principles on which it is founded and from which it is derived. So this was a definition that appealed to us over the last 40, 50 years very much, because it would say that it is knowledge duly arranged and referred to general principles. It more or less had the same meaning as what Mrs. Eddy said in the textbook, that divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible and adapted to the age in which we live, that it is adapted to the human consciousness and therefore is humanly construed. It shows that knowledge must be arranged so that there must be order in our knowledge, that what we know is not just an accumulation of isolated truths, but that those truths must be ordered and put into categories and into general principles on which it is founded and on which it can be derived, from which we could then derive the laws and the rules of that principle. So that's why then we have taken other definitions from the various dictionaries, from Oxford Dictionary, from Funk and Wagnall Dictionary, which were even a bit more adapted really to the present sense of science, and have taken those definitions about science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in a system. And we are working on that basis, and we could find all the references and the correlations in the Christian Science textbook. We have talked about that definition of science, which we have used a lot. Here, at this point, I would point out something else. First of all, I pointed out that we left out that definition divinely defined. We couldn't quite make up what that meant, as the atmosphere of God. Today, we can make up something out of it. The moment we come into holistic science, that definition appeals to us much more. And that only shows again that there is a great development that has been taking place, that science itself is revolutionary, has its own dynamics and its own determinism. Because in the connection with these two definitions, Mrs. Eddy said something else, which we never regarded. She says, more mistakes are made in the name of science than this period comprehends. She says, a lot of mistakes are being made with the present sense of science. It nearly knocked me over when I read this again. I have not taken notice of that for the last 40 years. Only this spring, as I was thinking about science, holistic science, and the atmosphere of God, I certainly saw that she said, right in that connection, that a lot of mistakes have been made in the name of science. And we can see now what she means in a higher sense. That a lot of mistakes have been made with the old science. Haven't they made mistakes? Isn't the old science really the dark age of science? That science that has been nurtured over 300-400 years and have brought us to an abyss? Is that the right term? Where we just don't know if it is 5 to 12 or already 5 after 12. We don't quite know. But everybody becomes aware that every moment things can just blow up. And if it doesn't blow up, the environment will kill us. So there are quite a few methods of killing the whole of mankind. And that's the fruits of old science. And that, I think, what she referred to, that the humanly construed sense of science was very dangerous. That if we stick to the old sense of science, that we can make terrific mistakes with it. And that we need to be very watchful that we get a new sense of science. Okay, now, again, I go back to a ground which is well known to me, but I summarize it, asking what does Mitzi say what she feels is science? What belongs to science? What are the criteria of science? What does she say about it? I state what you all know very well, and yet I state it. I like, again, to see the bigness of it, the grandeur of it, and to see that we really are much more consciously conscious of a new basis on which we should build. What does she say about science? She says, all science is divine, full stop, very short sentence. All science is divine. We read it, because it's a short sentence, we read it very quickly. And then we go to the next sentence. Instead of stopping and saying, my God, my God, my God, what does she say? All science is divine. Is physics divine? Is biology divine? Is chemistry divine? Is psychology divine? Is psychology divine? Is medicine divine? Are these sciences that go into hundreds, are they divine? Do they go out from a holistic, from point one, Roman one, from a holistic basis, from God? No, not one of them. Not even ordinary scholastic theology goes out from God. They go out from what they read into the Bible, from their concept, from an anthropomorphic concept of God. Not one goes out from God. And so you have a sentence with four words in it, and it really really should shake us right to the right through. Say, my word, here is a mankind that has been living, say, since Homo sapiens, since 50 or 100,000 years, and for the first time there comes somebody who says, look here, all what these people have been thinking in the way of science is all wrong. There is only one science that is right, and that's divine science. All science is divine. Shouldn't that shake us? Absolutely shake us. And that would be the good thing, if it would really shake us, if we would really be face to face and say and admit to ourselves finally that mankind has been on the wrong track. That mankind has been on the wrong track. See? That like Professor Lawrence, Nobel Prize winner, said the other day, he said, well, man has in his hands the atom bomb, and in his heart he feels like a caveman. That's the discrepancy. He has had a wrong science that has brought forth the atom bomb, but because he has had no divine basis, he still is a caveman. He still has the emotions of a caveman. Can I kill the other? How can I kill the other to get something out of it? So these short sentences should be pondered. One should be able to sit back and wonder. A true scientist is not characterized by his great intelligence or by his great knowledge. A true scientist always is described as that one that can still wonder, that can entertain within himself the wonder for the investigation of his object. And we should keep that up, that wonder that we see. What does that mean, that all science is divine, that it has not a human basis, that what the human mind is thinking out is not science? And David Bohm is very clear about that. He says, people always think that what they investigate is reality, and they don't see that they just investigate their own mind, their own way of thinking, but not reality. Because they use their own human way of method and elements of thinking. And so he was right when he said, well, the observer is important, but we don't know anything about that observer. That science has not found out yet. Gosh, can you see what a terrific field lies before us? We are not after 100 years studying this Christian Science textbook at the point where we can say, now we got it. Now we know it more or less. There are just here and there sentences that I don't know quite well what they mean. But for a great extent, we know now the textbook. No, we haven't the faintest idea yet. It's a completely new era that is breaking on us, where we begin to wonder about the wonders of the basis of the textbook. That's where we are. All science is divine, meaning, implying that all that has not the divine basis is not science. It's just guesswork, it's just hypotheses, it's just illusion, it's just opinions, but not science that touches reality. Therefore, she says, the origin of science is in mind. Science is a divine utterance. All science is an emanation of the divine mind. Are the sciences that we know, those round about 100 sciences that are now taught at the university, are they utterances of the divine mind? You agree with me that they are not. I don't think there is any fight over that. They are not. And yet we bow our knees before those scientists and think they are great. They may be great as people, as persons, but the teaching is not great. It's just one big error, one false basis. That's all there is. And now that they have 100 sciences, they think, well, that's not quite enough. And now we have those so-called hyphenated sciences. You know what hyphenated sciences are? You take physics and hyphenate it with chemistry, two sciences, and you hyphenate it, and then you have physical chemistry. Huh? And so you hyphenate psychology with medicine, and you have psychosomatic medicine. These are hyphenated sciences. Therefore, if you have 100 sciences and you begin to hyphenate their science, you have 100 times 100 sciences, and you have 10,000 sciences, and then you hyphenate those further, and we have sciences by the millions, all on a wrong basis. All on the wrong basis. Mrs. Eddy's holistic. He says there is only one cause, only one origin of science. That's divine, that's the divine mind. All that comes out from that divine mind is an emanation from the divine mind, And all science is an emanation from that divine mind. Science relates to mind, capital M, not matter. Which science that are taught at the hundreds and hundreds of universities with thousands and tens, thousands, hundreds, thousands of students teach any science that relates to mind, capital M? I ask this. And the answer, we all know, we don't quarrel over it, not one of them does. On that point, we agree too. There's no quarrel on that. Isn't it a wonder? Isn't it something that we stand in wonder? That the science must be a holistic science that comes, that is an emanation of divine mind. Science, she says, has a spiritual, not a material origin. I ask, which of those hundred signs that are taught to hundreds and thousands of pupils are teaching spiritual science, a science that has a spiritual origin and not the human origin, not the material origin, not the sense testimony origin, not the psychological origin? None. There is none science taught in the whole world, in the university, that has a spiritual origin. Isn't that a catastrophe? Think of the billions that are spent all over the world for education, and all wrong. They said that the education of the future will be in spiritual science. Up to now, that future has not arrived, except when you look at small groups like we, who really try our best, the best we can, to educate students in spiritual science. But we are unknown. Nobody knows it. We are not on the media. We are a very secretly hidden group that nobody knows of. And that's good. The baby must be in Bethlehem for quite a while until he gets strong enough to go back to Israel and face Herod's, face the people. Yes, there is, she says, we are still asking what is science. She says, there is no physical science. There is no physical science. And yet everybody talks about physical science. Isn't it? I mean, to think that Mrs. Eddy wrote that at the height of the materialistic period, namely at the end of last century, which is the height of the materialistic period. Then with the turn of the century, it began to fade out a little bit. She wrote that there is no material science. One can see how everybody had to laugh at her. But she was right. 100 years ago, there are a few students, a little group that say, yes, you are right. And in another 100, 200 years, there will be a bigger group that says, yes, you are right. There may be even a university that may say, yes, you are right. But the time has not yet come. So we are still on the way and have to see how the Christ idea will use all possible channels so that it can pull through and establish in this world really the true sense of science. Therefore, she says, Christian science is preeminently scientific, though it deviates from the old science. Says, just because it deviates from the old science, does not base itself on material science, nonetheless, this science is scientific. It's scientific. Meaning that what she uses as science has scientific criteria. And she uses scientific criteria to explain her concept of science. So, the divine science of man, we come now to the true anthropology, the science of man, the divine science of man. That divine science of man is woven. Let me read it again. The divine science of man is woven into one web of consistency, without seam or rent. Naturally, this is a biblical language. translated into a metaphysical scientific language, she would say that the divine science of man is actually woven into a system, into a consistent system, into a system that does not contradict itself, that is without seam or end, that has no, what you can say, no leakage, no holes in it. Everything is consistent within itself. That's what she means. Yes. Furthermore, she says, oh, this is terrific. It should blow the whole world again. She says, science refers only to the laws of God, which science at the university, at the hundreds and thousands of universities with hundreds of thousands of students, is teaching that science refers only to those laws which are the laws of God, and we all agree none does it. There is no quarrel on it. We are so much in harmony today with each other. We agree on everything, and yet it shakes us. It should shake us. That's what I want to bring out. We know these sentences, but I want to bring out that we should stand in awe before that discovery and see the magnitude of that discovery. See the enormous difference between her concept of science and the world concept of science. But also we know that science is revolutionary. We know that science changes, that science goes through paradigm shifts. And so we know that little by little, because science itself is creative and has its own dynamics, that little by little, science itself will see where it builds on the wrong basis, and will little by little drop the wrong basis and adopt the right basis. Yes. Science, she says, is the immutable law of God good. Has any university taught that? That science is the immutable law of God? None. Just none. Yeah. Okay. So we get the new sense of science, where she says science rests on one fixed principle. Do all the sciences have one fixed principle that unites them? Do they see the one science of all the sciences? No. But they know that there exists. You know, right from the middle of the 1930s, for the first time, I think there were two Poles, Polish scientists, that began to talk that there must be a science of all sciences. And then 10 years later, with cybernetics, came the first more impressive introduction that every science has the science of cybernetics within itself. Then 10 years later came Bertel Lanfe in the middle of the 1950s and said there is a general system theory, therefore there is a system theory that applies to every science, see? And so we can see little by little, even this point, that there is a science of all science, and therefore one principle for all the sciences is coming somehow to light and is coming forth. Yes. Then another point that she brings out is this, in connection with that tremendous statement that I have repeated already a few times, that science is revolutionary in its very nature, she says something else. She says, to weave one thread of science through the looms of time is a miracle in itself. So we have a miracle. A miracle is always something where we stand in awe, in great wonderment. What is the great wonderment, the great awe that she depicts here? To weave one thread of science through the looms of time is a miracle. You know, we have witnessed that. We have witnessed that. At the end of the last summer school last year, I have shown you how since Mrs. Eddy's revelation in 1866, where the science has been revealed to her how over periods of time really we were really doing this to weave one thread of science through the looms of time. How little by little, step by step, what she only felt first as science, as an atmosphere of God, how little by little that thread of science was being woven through periods and periods of time to bring out the inner structure, the inner meaning, the inner consistency of that science. And so after 120 years already, we can look back and see how that thread was really woven through the looms of times. And so we can trust this idea that if it had had such a terrific development and a consistent development through 120 years, it will also have another development through the next 200 years. Because Mrs. Eddy said it will take a few centuries until her revelation will be understood. So, oh gosh, no. Do we have another minute? 45 seconds. She says, men and women of the 19th century, are you called to voice the higher order of science? What is the higher order of science? We have witnessed the transition from the old science to the new science. Are you called to voice the higher order of science? Question mark. Then obey this call. So we can see what our job is, that we have to really devote our lives to the investigation of her science. And we are just dumb fools if we are constantly concentrated on our little problems and try to solve our little problems. And hopefully you can't. Yeah. Because only the bigger can really heal the smaller. And without the big consciousness, we cannot do anything to the small parts. Okay. Thank you for the 45 seconds.